This is Jerry Wilmot bringing you London Column. London Column, which brings you items especially chosen for your interest and entertainment in the worldwide service of the BBC. In this edition of London Column, Richard Dimbleby reminds us that this week has seen the sixth anniversary of the Battle of Britain. You will hear how the government has taken action to prevent illegal occupation of premises by homeless squatters. And lastly, Stephen Grenfell, our man on the spot, introduces you to the mother and father of 16 children. While the peace conference at Paris continues and nations strive to reach a lasting agreement, we in Britain during this last week have been remembering how 6 years ago, a handful of boys in RAF blue took our lives and theirs in their hands and fought the battle which saved us from destruction, the Battle of Britain. Richard Dimbleby, who watched the flypast over London of hundreds of aeroplanes on Saturday, September the 14th, recalls the occasion which was being commemorated.
This is Richard Dimbleby speaking. I want to begin by reading from a small booklet that I have in front of me here. This is what it says. There were dogfights all over Kent. The air was, for some minutes, never for very long, vibrant with machine gun fire. As a background, there was a faint roar of hundreds of engines, which on occasion swelled to a fierce note as some crippled enemy fighter or bomber fell to the ground, or made for its base, dropping lower and lower, with Spitfires or Hurricanes diving upon it. Sometimes watchers would see the blue field of the sky blossom suddenly with the white flowers of parachutes. And the warm sun of those September days shone on an ever-increasing number of the wrecked carcasses of aircraft. And now again we've watched the proud successors to those few who fought 6 years ago. They flew across grey London sky in loud and noble procession, while Londoners about their daily tasks craned their faces to the sky to watch the thunderous passage.
Day, Sunday the 15th of September, a special service was held in Westminster Abbey, and again Richard Dimbleby was there. He described the scene as he stood under the organ loft before the service began.
Here, this Sunday afternoon, soldiers and sailors and many airmen, but many more civilians, are remembering that 15th of September, 6 years ago, the crucial day of the Battle of Britain. I suppose it's not exaggerating to say that what is being remembered in Westminster Abbey today is nothing less than the day on which our lives and our freedom were preserved.
High-ranking officers of the RAF were present at the service, Lord Stansgett, Lord Portal, and Lord Dowding, who, as Sir Hugh Dowding, was in command of operations during the fight. But most of the congregation, Dimbleby goes on to say, was made up of ordinary civilian men and women.
Still, it is the ordinary people who predominate, the friends and the relatives of the few, the children of the post-war generation, and some of those who were already veterans of two wars in 1940. It is they, the people, who fill the body of Westminster Abbey. They who also played a vital part in the Battle of Britain.
That was Richard Dimbleby speaking from Westminster Abbey before the commemoration service of the Battle of Britain on Sunday, September the 15th. Yet while we remember the glory of those fighting days, the troubles of post-war resettlement are very much with us. As with you, the housing shortage in Britain is acute, and lately large batches of people have taken unauthorized possession of army huts and buildings in many parts of the country. This squatters movement, as it's known, assumed alarming proportions by the end of last week under the leadership of the Communist Party. Audrey Russell describes a scene in London when a block of apartments was seized by squatters.
At the same time as the move on the Kensington flats, a smaller block in Marylebone was taken over at 59 Weymouth Street. And at this stage, the police just stood and looked on. Next morning, one of the squatters, who told me he was a member of the Communist Party, was still trying to sort out the families and allot the flats according to size. When I asked him how all these people had been gathered together, he said that it was through a system of small advertisements pasted up in shop windows. These offered accommodation with a code number and a telephone number attached. When the applicant rang the number, he was advised to come to a certain address at a certain time. During the day, the squatters applied to the local councils to turn on the services, water and light. This was done almost at once. By Tuesday afternoon, the campaign was spreading to several London suburbs, and also to Fountain Court, Westminster, a block of empty flats that was actually being repaired for housing by the local council at the time. By now, there were a good many opinions expressed that there was an essential difference between the squatters that took over empty army huts, which had no prospective tenants, and the squatters in the empty flats and houses that in the near future would be reverting to their normal use. It was felt that all that was happening was that one lot of tenants were forestalling another, but it went on spreading. On Wednesday afternoon, Abbey Lodge flat, St. John's Wood, that was used by the RAF during the war, was invaded, and at least 40 families marched in.
But action came with evening. The British government issued an official statement condemning the squatting campaign and announcing that legal proceedings would be taken against squatters.
The government take a very serious view of the forcible seizure and occupation by unauthorized persons of private premises in London, especially those required for housing and other public purposes. This action has been instigated and organized by the Communist Party and must result in hindering rather than in helping the arrangements made for the orderly rehousing of those in need of accommodation. His Majesty's government are advised that both the civil and the criminal law have been violated. Unless steps are taken to check lawless measures of this sort, the rights of the ordinary law-abiding citizens are endangered and anarchy may result. It is the duty of the police to take every step within the limits of their resources to prevent breaches of the law, and they have been instructed to take appropriate action to prevent further forcible entries.
A few days after this government statement, a judgment in the High Court proved clearly that the squatters were in the wrong, and they are now getting out, at any rate, from the London apartments they seized. Yes, for homeless folk, peace has brought a further crop of problems. But Stephen Grenfell, London Column's man on the spot, is going to introduce you to a couple whose problems are always with them. We'll let him explain.
Hello, London Column. This is your man on the spot, Stephen Grenfell, calling you this week from the kitchen of number 161 Paget Road, Chatham in Kent. And what a remarkable kitchen it is. There's probably more work done in this kitchen than any other six in Chatham or anywhere in England, because it's the kitchen of Mrs. Wood, who is doing her very best to relieve the government's manpower shortage. At 52, Mrs. Wood's a very remarkable person, and so is Mr. Wood, because they've already had 16 children. And at 52, the last one Mrs. Wood had is Janet Christine, which was born only 3 months ago. Now, I want you to meet Mrs. Wood and Mr. Wood and some of the kids. Now, Mrs. Wood, it sounds almost impossible in these hard days to have 16 children. Perhaps you'd tell me, why you had 16. Do you like kids? You're crazy about them?
Yes, yes.
Tell me something about your children. What are they? How many have you got alive now?
14.
And what are they? Boys or girls?
Boys and girls.
What about starting way down at the bottom and telling me their ages and names?
Well, Janet Christine, she's 6 weeks old.
Only 6 weeks?
Yes. Jacqueline, 7 and a half.
Mm, that's a little redhead, isn't it?
Yes.
Who comes after that?
Arthur, 9.
Yeah.
The twins.
Yes, well, they were born when?
In May, 1935.
That makes them about 11. That's yes. Marina
and Margaret. Yes.
Mm. Going up a bit, how much
yes.
further?
Fred,
mm-hmm.
He's 12
yeah.
in June.
Is he at school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Beyond Fred?
Beyond Jack.
Yeah.
He's a stable lad at Newmarket.
How old is he?
15 and a half.
Yeah, and beyond Jack?
Stanley, 19.
So you almost forget them. You've
yes,
got so many.
Yes, Stanley, 19.
Where's Stanley?
He's down with his grand on holiday.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pearl, she's 18.
Oh, you forgot Pearl. She's
yes.
18.
But she does the greengrocer's round with her brother.
Mm-hmm, I see.
And then my boy, 21.
Yeah, where's
he's working at the waterworks.
Yeah.
And Frank.
Where's Frank now?
Now, Frank's in the Mechanized Army Corps, traveling around
in
London.
At the moment? In London?
Yes. Comes into London on the 13th.
Mm. How many of your sons are in the Army during
the
war?
Another one.
Mm, there was Frank.
Yes.
And beyond Frank?
Tom.
Yeah, what's he do?
25. He's does a greengrocer's round.
Mm-hmm.
All through the war, we carried on as best we could,
mm-hmm.
delivering the greengrocery round.
And beyond him?
Mrs. Butler.
Mrs. Butler?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She's married and got two children.
So your grandmother as well?
Yes. And Mrs. Bethel?
Yeah.
She's married and got four children.
And how many is that now? That's about...
Six grandchildren. That's 14 of them.
That's 14 of them.
Yes.
Tell me, how do you get by for things like rations these days? I mean, bread, milk, soap,
things like that. Not too bad, but the soap problem and the lard is...
Well, what do you get in the way of soap, for instance? What do you get for a baby?
Well, we get two books of soap for the baby.
What does it work
when out? We can get it. Packet of soap flakes and a tablet of soap.
For how long? For a month?
For a month.
Well, little babies like it, you can't get by on it.
No, when you get another tablet of soap and another packet of soap flakes, making two in all for the month's washing for the baby with nappies, underclothes, bathing and everything else.
It's a wonder you even clean the door. Tell me, when do you go, what's your shopping day?
Well, any day.
What do? You send a horde of small children out of the ration.
Yes, we send out when we want them.
And bring it back in a large van.
Generally, Fridays, I do the big shopping, you know, and Saturdays we go and do the Sunday joint.
And what do you get in the Sunday joint? You get half a cow, I should think, don't you?
Well, we don't do too bad.
What
you
about
know?
Bread?
Well,
how many loaves do you get a week?
It runs out 2.5 loaves a day.
A day.
On each book.
And you find that you can keep all these...
Well, I do.
300 children
yes, I do manage, because I cook vegetables, you see. Then they have the dinners at the canteen. I pay for them to have their dinners at the canteen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they should have it.
Well, Lennon Column, here's Mr. Wood. We've dragged him away from his shop. He's the father of this prolific brood. He's looking a bit worried and a bit weary with them all, I don't mind telling you, because I don't think he normally comes back in the middle of the morning. Now, Mr. Wood, tell us something about yourself. How old are you?
Well, I'm 55. Next month.
Are you a Kent man or a Kentish
man? Yes, no, I'm bred and born in Maidstone, Kent.
And when did you get married?
Got married at the altar church.
Mm-hmm. What are you doing at the moment? What's your job now?
Fruit and greengrocer.
And you find, did you get any help from your family?
Yes, I buy a lot of food and they help me pick it all.
And they probably help you eat it too. How do you manage to make the money to keep all these children alive and clothes and boots and things like that?
Right. I do that with the fruit.
The business going well, is it?
Yes.
Did you go hop picking at all with all your family?
No.
No, we got a lot of fruit. And so, Lennon Column, still bewildered and still not quite certain about the names, but knowing that it's a very difficult proposition to have and bring up 16 children, this is Stephen Grenfell returning you from Chatham, the kitchen of Mrs. Wood in 161 Paget Road, to the studios of Lennon Column.
Thank you, Stephen Grenfell. And now from London, we send you across the waters of the Atlantic the sound of the bells of one of our oldest churches, the Church of St. Mary the Bow. And their music, this is your narrator, Jerry Wilmot, closing Lennon Column. This program was written and produced by Miranda Dulley.